Let's talk about Jano.
Hello, I'm Andy.
And he's Andy.
And that's Joshua. We're very excited to talk today about one of my favorite topics, which is giallo, Italian horror slash thrillers from the 1970s and early 80s. It's one of my favorite genres. I've done a deep dive on it over the last year, and I've been buying the boutique Blu-rays from Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow, and I've been buying the books by Troy Howarth, and joining in conversations and going full bore. I love it. And so I thought today, I've been hounding and begging Joshua to kind of get on board and check it out, see what you think. I'd love to talk to somebody about this. One of the things I love is that there are hundreds of giallo films. And so it's kind of like this brand new can of worms you can dive into. Also, they weren't widely available until recently with the advent of streaming and boutique Blu-rays. They were kind of tough to find on VHS. There's a lot of people just coming into giallo. You're not late to the game if you're watching us now. So I thought today we would do what, why, and which. So what is a giallo? Why do I like them? And maybe you will too. And which ones do we put at the top of our list? I did not want this just to be me talking straight to the camera. That's a whole different podcast.
That's definitely a first.
So I'm going to try to include you.
Well, how about I start with the background?
All right, go ahead.
So giallo came about from the invention of the color yellow. Some directors saw some canaries flying and then decided, let's make movies about killing people based on these canaries.
Well, yes and.
Yes and. No. So, all right. Fascism, the latest buzzword.
Right. Right? Why is that on our minds?
Yeah. Who knows? So giallo, basically four genres after escaping a fascist regime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There was a lot of censorship.
So that's,
now there's freedom.
Right. And so after Italy got rid of its fascist regime,
right,
a whole wave of cinema came in called post-realism. Prior to that, it was the white telephone type of films where it was how everything is beautiful, everything is great, and the rich are kind of in control and, mm-hmm. and the poor were never talked about.
Right.
After they got rid of the fascists, directors had their shackles removed, and they started to go into this post-realism world where it was showing the hyper-real life of life in Italy. Along with post-realism was one of my favorite genres of noir,
mm-hmm. yeah.
noir cinema. So giallo is heavily influenced by noir.
Yes.
And then there was also a series of German films
mm-hmm.
that were taking these kind of pulp novel approaches
right.
to films. And so the Italian directors kind of mashed that all together and started to bring about this new kind of concept, which was giallo, which was, again, based off of the yellow-covered pulp
right.
novels of...
Like, when we say Pulp Fiction, American audiences understand, oh, it's lurid subject matter, it was printed on a cheaper type of paper, it was not considered high-quality art. And so giallo novels were kind of, oh, it's a murder mystery, Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes type of thing. And so there was a movie critic that initially said, oh, this is like a giallo. And that stuck. I was reading up on some of the history. Mario Bava did The Girl Who Knew Too Much, and that in 1962. Yep. And that's considered the first movie to kind of start this path. And there wasn't a ton of violence in it, but it kind of, but then he did a follow-up immediately after called Blood and Black Lace. And that's the one that introduced the black leather-gloved killer and it was a little more of the sultry, steamy, sexy side of murder and intrigue. The giallo was critical of Italy.
It was very critical.
And for the first time, some of the movies were the directors were criticized for openly criticizing Italian negatives. And specifically, Don't Torture a Duckling a lot of people hated it when it first came out because it was a seedier, less glamorous side of Italy. And it was kind of saying Italians do this. And that's how it was perceived when it came out. And so the directors had the freedom to be critical. There's a list of criteria that kind of makes something a giallo or not. One of them is that there's very rarely any type of supernatural element. The antagonist or the malevolent force is always human. It's not a werewolf or a ghost or a vampire. It's usually human, and they're usually getting revenge, or they have psychological issues from trauma or a myriad of things. So it's usually one of those. And they usually have black leather gloves, and they usually stalk people. There is tons of shameless nudity and gore, and it's fantastic. And it's also beautifully shot. Giallo has incredible cinematography and camera work and bold colors and specific colors.
Well, it was an experimental time, right? So with the advent of the post-realism and being critical, like one of the other kind of telltale signs of a giallo film is the police are kind of incompetent or useless, right?
Right.
It's maybe not that they're dumb, they just, they're shackled by bureaucracy, maybe.
Right.
It's also kind of anti-machoism because a lot of times the guy kind of figures out what's going on, but a lot of times he stumbles upon it.
Right.
And the lead actor isn't always the smartest one, right?
Like
Bird with the crystal plumage.
Right.
The main guy did not discover who the killer was.
Right.
It was his was like, oh, that sounds like this. As weird as it is to say, because you said there's a lot of nudity, which there is, it's got a little more of a feminist anti-machoism approach to it. Because the women, a lot of times, are strong. They're not
very strong.
They're not damsel in distresses.
Right.
They fight back.
Right.
And even though they...
Or they help solve their mysteries and...
They either help solve the mysteries or they fight back before they're overpowered because...
Right.
There's murder, so somebody has to die.
Somebody has to die.
One of the points of Deep Red was Argento was trying to move away from doing giallo films at that point. He had also been criticized for being misogynistic, that his films were misogynistic. And he tried doing a film that was not a giallo, and it flopped. And people were like, you're kind of done, dude. And he's like, well, I don't know. And so they begged him to come do another giallo piece. He's like, ah, fine, I'll do it. So he did Deep Red, which is one of the just strongest visual and stories together. And in Deep Red, his muse, the reporter, she beats the guy at the arm wrestling.
Yeah.
So the main character.
That's a big discussion throughout the entire film about, women do this and men do this. And every time he said something.
Right. Highly, highly recommend Deep Red.
It's really good.
However, so he made the main character chauvinistic and lose all those arguments on purpose to kind of say, hey, look, you've been calling my movies misogynistic. I was doing a movie about a bad guy, right? So that was his mouthpiece for kind of defending himself. Yeah. I also want to point out that the protagonist in Deep Red and in other movies, he's a doofus. He's the one working on the mystery the most. The police aren't doing anything. And he does follow clues, but he's neurotic. He doesn't have a lot of confidence. He's misogynistic. He's kind of plundering through it. He is not the type of person that I relate to. Usually, if there's the main character is somebody that I wish I was, or you watch them grow and change like Luke Skywalker. But he's just kind of like, I'm like, who is this guy? And it's part of that noir feminism gives it a platform to have those conversations in Italy in the 70s.
But you had interesting things in that one where, like, it wasn't even just the things that were said. It was even carried out visually.
Right.
So when they're in the tiny car,
he's
way back down tiny, and she's like over, she's towering in the driver's seat and things like that. And he constantly does the wrong thing.
He doesn't listen.
Yeah.
My favorite part of Deep Red is the camera work. So Deep Red has a great story. One of the last criteria I wanted to not forget was the plot and what the mystery is not the main reason you're watching the movie. Well, sometimes they're really good, but sometimes they're like, okay, you had a hidden killer, here's your answer, right? So not every single giallo is presented for its amazing plot and everything follows. Sometimes the plot, the mystery, exists for the visuals and themes to have a place. But Deep Red, it is a fantastically solid, like even if it wasn't a giallo, I think I would enjoy the plot. But the visuals, the close-up camera work, kind of like zooming over like children's toys, and then it comes up and over the black gloves with the zipper on it. It just fit with the music and the vibe and where it was in the story. And the colors and the horrifying children's drawings. I think Deep Red nails it on high visual and cinematography, but also the story and the themes and the plot is also pretty strong. It's pretty good. There's somewhere that it doesn't always match up. And then the last criteria is, it is 1970s, it is Italy. The hair, the fashion, the cars, the music is amazing. I'm a convert. I'm a huge fan of Goblin now. I listen to Goblin on my Spotify. I have a playlist just of Gialli. The music and the car and the hairs and the scarves and the different colors of the scarves, all those things are absolutely fantastic and so delightful to indulge in. One of the other things about Deep Red was a lot of the violence was more relatable. Like there's a guy that gets his teeth smashed against a desk and it's like, oh. And then as somebody else is burned with hot water. These are things in our real life. I'm worried about bashing my teeth or getting burned. Whereas getting chopped in with a cleaver or shot by a gun or stabbed, I don't want those things to happen, but those are not daily dangers.
Right.
And so Deep Red in particular really kind of nailed it on some of those inherent dangers and fears, and so psychologically it was a little stronger.
The blood, the mm-hmm. the oversaturation almost,
yes,
in the use of color, especially when it comes to blood, is also a very big kind of marker. The horror landscape today would not look like it does,
right,
if it weren't for the giallo movies.
Right. We talked about the criteria, and so our horror movies, so let's look at the 80s slasher movies that were inspired by giallo, and we'll get into that in just a minute. Society has a low opinion of the massive amounts of sequels, and like,
right,
we love Halloween, right? And Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, but you get into like Jason versus Freddy and some of the other remakes of Halloween, they're kind of considered, this was a cash grab, this was a money-making thing. Because there was a thirst for giallo films, the Italian version of Hollywood, just like 80s Hollywood was making slasher films, 70s Italy was doing giallo. However, they were attracting super well-known and high-class writers and directors. It wasn't this guy that wrote a screenplay and threw blood on some girls. It was,
right,
giallo had a quality to it. Mm-hmm. Sure, if you get called a giallo, you get to sell more tickets, but what's the allure? There was a quote or a thought that I was reading about in one of Troy's books. By sticking to constraints, right? Like, okay, can't do supernatural. I need to have a murder mystery. I want to have this. I want to have that. You're accessing a vocabulary that the audience already has, and that gives you more freedom. So restriction actually is providing freedom. Because if you're saying, look, I'm going to fit in this flower pot, but now my flowers can look like something you've never seen before. And so I love that juxtaposition of restraints and guidelines and rules actually provides more freedom than if you just wanted to do an abstract piece where nobody had that common vocabulary. And we've said before, I always believe art thrives under challenge. I feel like my artwork, if I'm sticking like, oh, let me figure out if I can do this, that piece of art is bigger and better and stronger than just something where I free-formed and just scribbled on something.
By having the guidelines of what marks a giallo film does allow for that, okay, well, how am I gonna do the mystery this mm-hmm. time? How am I gonna do the murders this time and not be the same cookie cutter?
Right.
One of the other Godfather movies of the genre is Bird with the Crystal Plumage, mm-hmm. and it broke some of the rules.
Yeah.
Not of what makes a giallo film,
right,
like Suspiria did. It's pretty much always a guy that does it.
Right.
And it's not.
Right.
You know, so it turns a lot of things on its head.
Right.
Which I liked. And it inspired a lot more. It didn't have nudity.
Mm-hmm.
The kills were unique, but they weren't overly grotesque or gruesome.
Right.
They were kind of tame, obviously early on in the timeline of the genre, but it also kind of set the stage for people to kind of branch off from
right
with that.
Let's pivot there. That's an excellent transition. I want to talk about Bay of Blood.
That broke a lot of the rules.
It did.
But not the main one.
Right.
No supernatural.
There was no supernatural. Bay of Blood, let me give you my experience on it. I saw it was on a list. I love film history and significant landmarks in film. Like, I love the movie Young Sherlock Holmes. But I also love the fact that that was the first appearance of a CG character on film. And I like talking about the evolution of that into Last Starfighter and then Abyss and then T2, blah, blah, blah. If you look at Bay of Blood was considered a huge influence on at least Friday the 13th. There's a couple kills that are directly related. But the kills in Bay of Blood are insane. I'm going to say this. This came out almost 50 years ago. And there's a head chopping scene where you're left with the stump of the neck. And I see the scene, I was like, that is one of the best neck stumps I have ever seen. We have CG now where you can have blood and movement and muscles, and it can be seamless between real person's head and fake. This chop with the head right there is better, I think is better than anything I've seen. Since I'm sure there's more, well, the cleaver to the face, the spear going through. So it's ridiculous, right? It's that was over the top. People, mainly the makers of Friday the 13th, are like, that's what we're doing. Yeah. We need somebody chasing down campers one by one and doing stuff like this. It's a fantastic movie. The ending is bonkers.
There's multiple killers.
Yes.
There's not one
right
evil person, one
right
bad person. There's
right. And it's bonkers. Like, you're not, see, and this is one of the times where I don't think you're supposed to figure out
no
the plot of Bay of Blood.
No.
That's not the point.
No.
There is a plot. There is an answer to all the
and
questions.
It's kind of a convoluted plot,
it is
too. It's a little,
you're like, okay.
That's one thing I've noticed, though, with a lot of the giallo is that the first act is usually really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second act, or
right. Well, you eat your vegetables. Now
or third act type of thing, depending on how it's structured. That's kind of where they'll kind of go off the rails. And I wasn't on my phone while watching it either.
That's good. Right. You know. Do not be on your phone. It's tempting.
You can't.
Mentalities over the last 50 years have deteriorated or changed. One could say that a giallo film feels like a slower pace than we're used to today, right? As far as the distance between action, things like that. So I could see younger audiences being tempted to be on their phone because nothing just happened. It's like a long drive through the countryside. I can look at my phone until someone talks again. I don't recommend that. Don't be on your phone. Give it some patience, give it some time. Dark room, set aside the time. Really do that. But if you look at the structure of Bay of Blood, there's the intro, like, oh, here's campers happening upon a bay where they can swim in and, oh, we can bust in and do this. And then there's the element of who owns the lake or the bay and who wants to purchase it and who wants to do this. And then people start dying. And then there's a conclusion. And the conclusion, you're kind of like, okay, right, sure.
And then it ends.
And then there's this bonkers ending, like bonkers. And I was like, you know what? That's great. I love that there was a bonkers ending because there needed to be a coda on the end.
Yep.
Kind of like Cabin Fever. Eli Roth is a huge giallo fan. And in fact, probably watching all of his history of horror episodes, he talks about giallo all the time. Now thinking about it, Cabin Fever has, okay, here's the ending. What are you going to do? And then a bonkers ending just out of the blue. And now it's like, ah, he loves giallo. It totally made sense. So I do love Bay of Blood. It's its own animal. I think like it doesn't fit a lot of, because it's not in Rome or like in a city, right? It's out in the woods
where most of them are very
urban. Yeah.
Very few people.
Yeah. So, but if you love slasher movies, you cannot ignore the importance and significance and influence of Bay of Blood. And I highly recommend it. So I'm going to pivot now. I'm going to throw in a little, I've been working on this one. One of the reasons why I love giallo is I love things that are low class sometimes, right? I'm a fan of naked ladies in movies and big explosions and potty humor and hot dogs, right? Like I'm pizza and wings guy. I love these things. I also get very agitated when people are dismissive of low class pursuits. Let me call it that. So, here's the deal. What do I love? I love ham. I love ham. I love pepperoni. I love salami. And people are like, hey, what's your favorite food? And you're like, oh, I like ham. And they're gonna look at you like you're a fool. Here's the thing though. 3 years ago, I went to Spain and I learned about jamón, which is the best ham in the world, Iberico. They feed the pigs acorns. They are raised. I think they get back rubs once a week. It is a very pampered life for these pigs. It's the best ham in the world. And the biggest chef will tell you that jamón is like one of the greatest things you can possibly eat. And so I kind of like, aha, I found a workaround. I still get to say I love ham, but I found the fanciest ham. That being said, I love movies that are full of gore and naked ladies, but I have found the fanciest of the naked lady gory movies. And so that was an intro, right? That was my intro. That's why I started watching all these things. But then I was like, holy crap. Look at I'm so inspired by the cinematography and the direction. And then I'm getting these books and I'm reading these books about how the town of old guys that are feasting upon the underage prostitutes. Yeah, lurid, disgusting, right? But it's this huge takedown of old society in Italy. And like, it was about specific politicians and it was very critical. It's like a political cartoon. And so I was like, wow, there's depth and layers to a lowbrow like gore, right? You tell somebody like, I just like gory movies, I like blood and guts. They're gonna be like, well, how are you furthering your, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this stuff is like, well, it was commentary, it was new, it was experimental. So it's like the pinkies out version of your favorite horror movie. So I'm gonna use that to pivot into Torso. Torso is one of my favorite movies. Torso is considered the very first slasher film. This was the movie that started with a list of people dying one by one. This is what inspired movies like Halloween. This is what inspired an entire genre where you got a list of characters and each one's gonna die. And then you have a final girl or not. Mass killers, blah, blah. Now, Torso's got a little bit of a complication to it. It's got a little bit of plot, multiple twists and things like that. And it's pretty strong. It's not one of the worst stupid plots. It's there.
Yeah.
I love it because it's not the number one, right? It's not Deep Red. It's not Suspiria or Tenebrae or it's not. It's kind of its own beast over here, and it is fantastic. I love that it's significant. I love the women in this movie are absolutely drop-dead gorgeous.
Speaking of the women in the movie, though, I like how it, again, kind of turned the genre sideways a little bit. One of the things that's very common with giallo movies is there's not a lot of diversity in color, right? You don't see a lot of people of color in the movies. Right?
Correct.
Where a Torso, you do have it. You don't feel it shoehorned in.
No.
It made sense.
Right. Because they're international students.
It's international students. The other thing is that there's not a lot of girl-on-girl action throughout the movies because it's a more heterosexual
world.
Right. There's some teasing and inklings of maybe some bisexuality, but never like just lesbianism, right?
Right.
Whereas in Torso, you're getting both
right
at the same time.
At the same time, which is the way I like it. There it is.
It feels natural, right?
Yes.
It's not like, ooh, let's do this for titillation, because they don't spend a lot of time on it,
right?
They could have done those, instead of a long drive through the countryside, they could have done a long, slow
bubble bath
bedroom scene,
yes,
or bubble bath, and they don't.
Right.
They kind of keep it short, not too in your face.
Right, well, it's in somebody's face, just not ours.
But I liked how it kind of shifted that up. I also like, though, that every male that was in it was seen as, oh, he must be the killer.
Dangerous, yeah.
Every single one, even the ones that ended up being like the heroes.
Right.
Up to that point, you're like, ooh, I got just kind of this weird, sickly feeling about this guy. I don't know. Again, she wasn't a damsel in distress.
Right.
Because she was fighting back, but they played with tension with the audience.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The
key scene.
The key scene is one of the most suspenseful things I've seen. I want to go back to the lesbianism for a minute. I did just watch Four Flies on Grey Velvet, which is considered an early, that's Argento as well. There is a homosexual detective in that movie, and it's kind of played for laughs. He's kind of, it's this guy is gay, isn't that funny? That's kind of the presentation, which is problematic and not how our value is aligned today. And so I like the fact that first off in Torso, the LGBTQ elements were not played for laughs or for spectacle, like look what we did. So I do appreciate that.
And you get a little bit of that in, I think Bird with the Crystal Plumage in the lineup.
Yeah.
Now all of the, pretty much any film that I've seen, any JLO film I've seen where there is a gay male character.
Right.
It's overly flamboyant, over the top, just like, come on now.
And it's funny.
And it's
not
funny.
For inclusion, but for these jokes write themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
However, during the police lineup scene, they're bringing in all these guys, and there was a guy in there that was definitely homosexual cross-dresser, I think.
Right.
And the cops were like, no, not him. This is the group for the perverse, not the whatever.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I would hope not. So it was, I don't know if it was like a nod or not, or if I'm just putting my own, if I'm projecting onto that, but it was them basically saying, they're not perverse. That person is not perverse for being gay.
Right.
He's just in the wrong lineup.
Right.
So it was kind of like a nod of, we know we're playing it for joke, but we don't think
it's
negatively.
Mean-hearted.
Towards. Right.
Like, would a gay person find that also funny or poignant, or find it kind of offensive and targeted?
They go to the guy goes to an antique shop because at the antique shop there was a lady there that worked there that got murdered.
Okay.
It was part of this serial killer's spree. But he goes there, and a guy that's running it is gay. Again, overly flamboyant. But he was like laying it on thick, hitting on the main character a lot, making the main character very uncomfortable.
Right.
Which I kind of like that because it, again, twists.
Right.
Because normally it's the guy being overly aggressive towards the woman.
Right.
And now this guy.
You don't like it, do you? Right.
Exactly.
Like teaching a lesson.
I thought that was great. And that's also the same one where he was very chauvinistic throughout the film, but being knocked down.
Right.
So I saw that as just another level of.
Right.
You don't like this, do you? It sucks, doesn't it?
It does. Kind of puts you in your place.
Yeah.
And again, so these Jiawo movies are not only inspiring, but they do have things to say.
They do.
And they've wrapped it in a CD wrapper sometimes,
having
violence and sex, but the messaging is still there. One other thing about Torso is not only did they kind of hold back showing you sex in your face, for being the world's first slasher, they also held back the violence.
Yeah.
You see the aftermath, or
you see it start. Like you see bodies laying down and a hacksaw coming out, and you're like, oh, this is gonna be good.
Right.
And then as it starts, it cuts away to the to the woman's perspective.
Right.
Or to something else. And so it was very restrained.
Right. Or the girl drowned in the shallow water. You don't see that. You just see her in the water later.
Yeah,
I thought that was amazing. The fact that the thing that kicked off slashers doesn't really have the slashing in it so much.
Yeah.
The best kill that they show on screen is that dude's head. I love when the car mashes the guy's head against the wall because, it was 1970, whatever, and effects being what they are, they had a guy, they had a car, they switch to a dummy with a rubber head, like very clearly. It squishes the rubber head.
Maybe that's what inspired Lloyd Kaufman to do everything he has done.
Very, very toxic. But then the car pulls away and the guy's like, or it's not smushed, like they switch to a bloodied head.
It's like if you took like a bouncy ball and like mostly deflated it.
Right. So it's kind of one of those, yes, awesome.
That was awesome.
That was
because you also didn't get restrained. You didn't get brain spraying everywhere.
Right.
It was
gross.
Just a squished head.
Yeah.
Like nothing was broken or.
Yeah.
But it was an awesome kid.
So I love Torso.
They do a lot of clues throughout, kind of like you, kind of like Rian Johnson with Knives Out and
right.
Glass Onion.
If you're watching,
you can pick up on a lot of clues,
right?
I like that they play with your mind mm-hmm. the same way the characters are dealing with
right.
remembering the right thing, wrong thing.
Right.
Is it black with red?
Right.
Things, or is it red with black?
Red herrings like are such a huge
thing. Oh, yeah.
And then people start looking, now because when you start using a list of criteria, and one of the criteria is red herrings, people are now looking yeah. for red herrings. And when the director knows you're looking for red herrings, they start f***ing with you and changing that. And so there's this, you came to play, I'm here to play with you. And so I love that.
But it works with the audience, because when yep. they're saying, oh, well, no, he had that scarf.
Right.
And you're seeing it in their mind. You're like, yeah.
Boom. Right.
He's the bad guy. You're like, oh, it's way too early, though.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, no, his was black with the red designs, but the
right.
killer was red with black designs.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little ridiculous.
It worked. It didn't feel silly. It
right.
felt real.
Yes. It was, we're forced in there.
Yeah. Because it's the thing that you deal with a lot when you see this on, like, in courts and everything else. It's the unreliable narrator.
Right, yeah.
Right, so this is what I saw, judge, but is it what you saw?
Right.
It's what you remember, but it might not be what you saw.
Right.
And so they brought that into the movie, again, because every guy was a bad guy.
Right.
Until he wasn't.
Until he wasn't.
And there were very few, there was even some that were bad guys, but didn't do anything bad. It just was.
They're creeps.
He was a creep.
Right. And there's plenty of creeps.
Oh,
there's plenty of creeps.
A lot of creeps in it.
But so I love Torso. I'm glad you saw Torso. Wait. I did bring that one. Torso is just absolutely fantastic. You got the black leather gloves. You got the creepy ski mask face. The headlights at the beginning. There's a guy and a girl making out in their car, and they think they see something. So they turn on the headlights, and the boyfriend gets out to go investigate. And he never comes back. And then the girl gets out of the car to go investigate, and then the headlights turn off. Meaning her one spot of safety to get back to has been compromised. That's all I'm gonna say about that. And it's like, oh shit, like that's so simple.
Yeah.
But you're with them in there, right? Or you wish you were. And the way, just little simple things like lights and attention, it's done beautifully. And the key scene, totally worth it. So Torso is one of my high recommends. I have one more that's our big one. And to me, I consider the pinnacle giallo, and that's Tenebrae, also by Argento. Again, funny story. He was now done doing giallos. He was done. He thought he had played it out. He thought he had explored everything. He was trying to move on to other things. He got begged to come back. Begged. Finally, I'm guessing the dollar signs lined up, or Lyra signs, and he's like, fine, F you. You want a giallo, you're gonna get the most giallo-y giallo I can possibly do. Kind of a smart ass went into it and created one of, first off, his greatest and one of the best giallo films. And it was all because he was a smart ass and he was trying to like really lay it on thick. Did you like Tenebrae because the opening?
I love Tenebrae because of the opening. Once I saw that, I'm like, sold. I'm done. End credits.
Yeah. Like, what an asshole.
You keep talking about how great Tenebrae is.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was only like a 2.5 minute long movie.
Right, it's right there. You feel like, done. The main character rides a bicycle down the highway on the way to JFK Airport. Trucks and buses are honking at him because he's going straight down the highway on the way to the airport.
I loved it.
I was like, Josh was going to like this one.
Loved it. Yep.
Tenebrae, the story is a little bit convoluted, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You know what? It didn't get convoluted until maybe the last
10, 15. You're kind of following along. It's heavily inspired Basic Instinct, this movie.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, Basic Instinct is kind of considered a postmodern giallo. There's a handful of movies that are heavily steeped in giallo, and Basic Instinct is one of them. And we can talk about Basic Instinct and spread that one open whenever we want. So I love Tenebrae. I love the music, first off, of my entire giallo playlist. The The Goblin soundtrack on Tenet Parade is the absolute key. The lead guy, I do like him. He's an older gentleman, but he's not a doofus. And he's not a little guy. He's like a petite guy, but he's smooth. He's in control. He's trying to figure it out. He's a big part of the whole thing. He's mouthing off to police, mouthing off to his agent, who is his only source of income. He's driving his bike down the highway. He just doesn't give a leaves his baggage at the airport. That was like
good idea. He goes to take a phone call and he just drops it there.
Yeah.
I will say that maybe this is also Argento responding to critics.
Yeah, there's definitely
because the interview with the friend, the book critic, that is like, you just want to hurt women,
right,
and you're a chauvinist and you're blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But they're good friends, right? And he's like, it's a murder mystery. What do you want? People have to die, you know, no big deal. So I think it was could be kind of a.
Yeah. So the story's fine. It's not my favorite. The cinematography and how they film the kills.
Yeah.
The arm, I'm going to only say that because you got to be shocked when you see that. But like the head coming through the window and the hole in the t-shirt, the dog chase, the ending reveals with lightning and whatnot. Everything about it is like visually, it's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. It's not gory of all the movies.
I would say it's media.
Right. It got heavily censored. The blood splatter, which you're like, what? Because it's just like somebody had ketchup and went, right?
Yeah.
That got censored. It was like, what the heck? Right. So he wasn't the president.
No, he was
prime minister. Well,
future Italian prime minister.
Okay. Little known fact about Tenebrae is that
we've known forever.
That we've known forever. The future wife of the Italian prime minister is one of the women that is killed so gloriously in this movie.
The arm and blood splatter.
Right. And so that was one of the things that kind of led to some of its censorship, which I said seemed kind of out of place. It was because the guy that happened to control all of communications was able to kind of flex and say, I do not want my wife being killed in this movie this way. And so just a little tidbit about Tenebrae. But I love Tenebrae. I love the music. I love the tension parts get me, the blood splatter, the cinematography, the guy, the humor. John Saxon wearing a hat poorly. He said, you cannot wear a hat very well.
They talk about wearing the hat.
They do, right. They talk about it because they're like, don't wear that hat.
It's like, I like this hat. No.
Yeah. Tenebrae, so Tenebrae is one that people are like, hey, I want to get into Giallo. And usually these four or five that we just talked about, those are the ones I would pick.
I think I like Deep Red more than Tenebrae.
Okay.
Outside of the opening scene.
Yeah.
But I like how they play with Torso. I like how they play with what did you see and what didn't you see. And you don't get that as much with Tenebrae.
Right. But I feel like Tenebrae definitely, like... So Deep Red has the visuals right here and the story here. It is all the way.
Yeah.
And Tenebrae is a bit more, it doesn't go all the way down that path, but I don't think it hurts it.
No, I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's a really good movie and people should definitely watch it.
These are the movies you get started with.
It's a great, great start.
There's a handful of other ones. Oh, I did want to talk about that. Joshua got me this movie as a gift. It is called Delirium. This movie is wackadoo. It is all over the place. It makes no sense. There's double backs and things they show you that aren't real and then things they don't show you that are. But it's great. The cinematography, how they film it is beautiful and sexy. Like it's the way they do it. You're like, oh, wow, this is fantastic movie. It stars Mariska Hargitay's father. And I thought that was a really cool piece of history, that because he acted in this movie, he was getting into cinema circles, and that's where he met Mariska Hargitay's mother. And then we have SVU, which is about solving sex crimes. So it all comes full circle.
Something like that.
Right.
Let's talk about the decline.
Right. Like anything, like any bubble, it keeps going and keeps going.
And we're talking like late mid 70s.
Yeah. Actually they say 72 was the height. You have some really strong ones that came, like Tenebrae was.
Tenebrae was 73?
It's in my book. I highly recommend these books. I've been taking notes. Yeah, 82.
Not even in the 70s, 80s.
Right.
So I think like around 75, 76 is when you started to get you get some standouts, but it's not consistent.
Right. Opera is a late one. Opera is fantastic. Opera is scary. The visuals are amazing. The story's fine. There's one or two laughable things in like the police procedures, but it's pretty good. I think what happened was you've got the mix of, like anything that's successful, you've got copycats that don't need to work as hard, right? Like, oh, buckets of blood, girls with no clothes, black leather gloves, let's make a movie.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, and that happened a lot. But I also think you then had the rise of the 80s slashers coming out of Hollywood. People did like those. The teenagers liked them. They didn't care about story.
Right.
They loved that the monster was a monster or supernatural, couldn't be killed or lived in your dreams or what, or lived in a basket. One of the greatest slasher movies of all time, Basket Case. You have that popularity, I think, also. And it's so funny that giallo birthed.
Well, so it birthed it, right?
And, right.
But yeah, like late 70s, you started having the American-made horror movies based or inspired by the giallo.
Right.
So they're doing it faster and cheaper
right
here.
And making way more money.
And they're able to get them out onto the street faster.
Right. And the kids are eating it up.
Because of its own strength and influence and success was its beginning right of its end.
Right. Which we see happen with a lot of art.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could compare it to like a chest burster. You know, you put this thing on your face and then it rips out your chest and kills everybody. Like
yeah,
that's pretty much what's happened. I think that was probably Ridley Scott's point of Alien. It was an examination of giallo.
We'll have to ask him.
All right.
We'll get him on
next
the show and ask.
Next, Ridley, when you're ready, I think we got your book for 2 weeks from now, but start thinking about that one.
Yeah.
Put together your notes.
Yeah.
Your defense of Alien.
And how it ties into giallo.
Right. So I have not watched a lot of giallo that people don't recommend, right? There's one I found because I heard it had the most amount of nudity, and most people consider it kind of a sour, is Sister of Ursula. And Sister of Ursula is nuts. It's filmed at this seaside Italian hotel, which is gorgeous. All of the locale on that place, I would film a movie there, it doesn't matter. It's absolutely gorgeous. There's lots of people having sex all the time, and then they get killed via a wooden dildo. I'm going to spoil it there for you a little bit.
It was a Woody.
It was. The movie's bonkers like everything else. And it was kind of like, okay, all right. But it was, you know, streaming. That's one of the beauties of giallo is most of these movies are streaming for free, or if you know where to look, they are everywhere.
Amazon, surprisingly, has access to a lot of different giallo.
Tubi. Who knew Tubi would be the savior of a genre? That was one of the ones I've watched where people later said, I don't recommend Sister of Ursula. It's not that great. So I don't recall where Sister Ursula fell in the whole scheme of things, release date wise. Mm. But I would say that's the worst one I've watched because I've stuck to ones that other people have recommended. And
then
I want to recommend to you as you jump in and check out. I really want to see women with a lizard with a woman's skin. That one's next to impossible to find streaming. I cannot find it streaming at all. And when I go to boutique DVD places, I've not seen it for sale because people probably bought it up.
Right.
So I've never seen, and I am dying to see, Lizard in a Woman's Skin. I heard that one's really good. I do want to talk about What Have You Done to Solange and Strip Nude for Your Killer. Both of those are amazing. And also the Yellow Canary sounds the alarm, but I remain deeply sleeping. And Pieces. Pieces is, they call this, I call it adjacent giallo. It's got everything in it that makes it a giallo. It is bloody, gory, full of naked ladies, full of red herrings, black leather glove, mask killers, psychosexual motivations. It is 100% giallo, but it's from Spain. And so some people say they'll be nice and call it a giallo adjacent. I actually think it's a Spanish-Italian. I believe that there was some cross pollination there. I highly recommend Pieces. Pieces is, of course, the place, the originator of the bastard meme, you know, this one.
Bastard! Bastard!
Everybody knows that one.
So that would be in Amarillo.
Ah, Amarillo. Thank you, Joshua. That's
Amarillo.
Amarillo. The tagline is, it's exactly what you think it is, which that sums it up. But I like that. I didn't think of that joke. That was a good one.
That's what you keep me around.
That's why I do what I do. What have you done to Solange is a tough watch. The protagonist is a creep. He's smooth and like nobody gives a that he doesn't give a He's a smooth operator, but he is a creep. And the victims are all young women, but the story is actually really good. It's the women are stabbed in a manner most unkind. That's the way I put it. But when you get to the end, you're like, holy crap, that was a good story. The cinematography is fantastic. The directing, the writing is fantastic. It's really good. But it is a little bit of a tough watch. Here's the cool part. One of the women, one of the characters, is Camille Keaton. Thank goodness, even without my glasses, Camille Keaton.
Related to Alex P?
Not at all.
Oh.
She plays the main character in I Spit on Your Grave. American, born actress. Was getting kind of fed up with lots of opportunities, or was encouraged to go to Europe to model. She's modeling in Europe, gets picked up for What Have You Done to Solange? And then she, because of Solange, she was in I Spit on Your Grave. And we're going to be talking about I Spit on Your Grave
in a future episode.
In a future episode about remakes and things like that. But when you're ready, we mentioned our four or five to get started, and Crystal Plumage is great. Opera is fantastic. Don't Torture a Duckling is a big one. We talked about that one. Lizard in Women's Skin. You can watch Suspiria if you want. If you like all these movies, you will love Suspiria. But Suspiria is not considered giallo because it has supernatural elements in it. Also, Strip Nude for Your Killer is another fantastic giallo piece. Very naked. Very, very naked. And in this movie, our photographers acting in an inappropriate manner. They go around trying to take pictures of naked ladies when they didn't want that.
This was the Andrew Jones biopic.
This was so shocking to me. I could not believe that somebody would act that way. Great flick, though. But again, maybe not when you start watching
with Scum of the Earth.
This is like one notch down from Scum of the Earth. It really is. I love Scum of the Earth.
Scum of the Earth.
HGL. It's a fantastic. But Strip Nude for Your Killer is great. There's a lot of humor in that one, but also a lot of visuals. That'd be right up your alley. And then one last one I want to talk about. It's called Don't Answer the Phone. It's American. It's not considered giallo, but it has all the pieces, has all the parts of a giallo. It was an American film. The acting in that is so bad. It is like samurai cop level bad. So it's worth watching just for the level of the acting.
I would say, so giallo adjacent.
Giallo adjacent.
There's a great movie, Don't Look Now.
Okay.
By Nicholas Roeg.
Yeah.
With Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
It's got all of the markings of a giallo film. However, there's a little bit of supernatural.
Okay.
Not in the pursuit of the killer, and
right,
the killer supernatural, but the Donald Sutherland's character's wife goes and visits some like fortune tellers, mm-hmm, and they're warning her of him having impending doom and stuff like that.
Right.
But like, if you took that out of the film, it's straight up, I mean, it really, A, it's an amazing film.
Right.
But also would be like giallo adjacent.
I will.
So I think it's a great film just in general.
Right.
If you want to see some like film as literature, film as art.
Right.
That's definitely one of them, but it also could mostly fall under that giallo world. One that I just watched recently that I was telling you about a little bit ago, The Stendhal Syndrome, mm-hmm, is Dario Argento, mm-hmm, directing his daughter, Asia,
right,
in a film. This was 96.
Mm.
It's two films in one.
Okay.
There is a definite act break from the way the movie's going to then it shifts.
Right.
It shifts with the wig. And that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
It's weird one.
Right.
It's still considered giallo.
Okay.
But I don't think it would fit necessarily in the 70s. Okay. I think it's more of a postmodern giallo type of thing.
Right.
But he did some interesting things with animation.
Okay.
And some really cool dreamy sequences.
Right.
But like with animation, there's a scene where she takes some pills.
Okay.
And so she pops some pills, but then you're taken to like the viewpoint of her
esophagus
and the pills coming down and things like, there's some right. weird things that go on in there, but it's kind of a tough watch.
Right.
Because of what happens repeatedly.
Subject matter. Yeah.
But then the second act is just, it's a totally different film. If you're on your phone and you look up somewhere, you're going to be like, wait,
right.
I don't understand what's going on. So stay off your phone. I think it's more adjacent than
right.
than anything.
And I love that it's still continuing to influence and inspire. Yeah. I love when things are inspiring and not just copied, but yeah. you know, seeds are planted, things grow and sprout.
And I think there's more, I don't think there's any, I could be wrong, tell me down below, but I don't think there's any like true giallo films anymore. I think right. things are just either adjacent or heavily inspired by. One of your movies that you love.
Last Night in Soho?
Yes.
Is giallo-ish.
Ish.
But there's a lot of supernatural yeah. elements, but the bad guy's not supernatural, right?
Right.
And so...
Heavily influenced.
Heavily influenced. Yeah. The style is there. You couldn't pull off elements of that movie if you just stuck to giallo rules.
Right.
And it was Edgar Wright. Fantastic movie. Absolutely recommend it. So if you're loving the giallo vibe and you have not yet watched Last Night in Soho, I absolutely recommend. I was going to say pop that in. I don't know. Do you guys still do physical media? I am absolutely all about physical media. But line that one up. How about that? Does that? I want to be all encompassing. Line that one up. Push play on Last Night in Soho with Anya Taylor-Joy. Just absolutely fantastic movie.
I'll say giallo is great. It's dated.
It is.
All of the movies are very dated. Like Star Wars is dated in its fashion.
A little bit, yeah. The hairstyles. Yeah.
And hairstyles and stuff. But everything else kind of
timeless.
Is timeless.
Right.
Giallo is 100%
this period of time.
Yes.
But that's its charm.
Well, that's its charm, but don't go into it expecting to see Don't Look Now or Last Night in Soho level acting.
Right.
And dialogue.
Right.
But do expect to see that level of cinematography and yeah. lighting, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Very intentional.
Yeah.
Very, they knew what they were doing, but they're also experimenting. But they knew how to get something good, how to get light.
Yeah. Like the visuals were well over the acting.
And to that piece, we talked about this a little bit. Also, take it with a grain of salt. Giallo is a product of its time.
Yeah.
And so there were some attitudes and words used that we don't use today.
Right.
But remember, this is 1973 Rome or countryside Italy or whatever. And it's okay to enjoy these films without saying, well, those are also now my morals because I approve of this movie. It's perfectly right. okay to go, that was a time. We've grown off from that. Yep. Torso, one of my favorites, does have a character that is, today we'd say he was on the spectrum perhaps, and he is played for laughs, but the bad guys are laughing at him. The director is not laughing at this character.
Right.
The bad people in town are laughing at him, so there's a little bit of sympathy there.
And then things happen to bad people.
Right. But... I did not love the how the special needs person was included in Torso. It was, at the end of the day, it was four laughs. I didn't feel like it was inclusive.
No.
Like I said, so there's lots of attitudes and morals that we have grown from.
Yes.
And it's perfectly okay to say, hey, I recognize that that was a part of its time.
It's not acceptable now.
Right.
Shouldn't have been acceptable then.
Right.
However, we can't change that. And by enjoying the film as a whole
mm-hmm.
is not advocating for the smaller elements within that are not
great. Right. So We'd love to hear from you. What are your favorite Giallo movies? What are some experiences you've had? Are there ones that we didn't mention that we should check out? So grab some J&B, put on your black leather gloves. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and enjoy your spooky season.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.